Hello, listeners. Tonight's episode of The Voice of Indy is an encore presentation, so no telephone calls or Twitter tonight. We would like to extend a very happy Thanksgiving to the listening audience, and we will return again next week with a new live episode, so be sure to tune in next week. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Time for Voice of Indy. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indy podcast. This is show number 106, and I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is Mr. Stephen G. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
Well, I'm fair to middling. I have a tendency to be sore and hurt all the darn time, it seems, so I'm sore and hurting, but otherwise everything's cool. I put a picture of a spider all over social media earlier this week. That's my girlfriend's. Right by my girlfriend's back door. She lets him stay there because he keeps bugs from getting in her house. And this thing was 3.5 inches. I couldn't believe all the attention that thing got. You put the hashtag spider in your stuff, and man, apparently there's a whole lot of spider fans out there. But I just got tons of attention to that. And people asking questions about it. The bad news is I took that picture that night. We had a storm. The next morning the spider was gone.
Uh-oh.
And so it got whacked. See, spiders like that, where they have big orb webs, they always have a place they can escape during a storm and wait it out and stuff. But apparently this blew up really bad, was bending the trees over, and this one just didn't make it. So the spider had its claim to fame, and we're proud that it's a Fresh Ink Group spider.
He had his 15 minutes, and he's still forever on social media.
Yeah, and my frogs is still famous. They're out there working it every night. We just go out and say, hey.
Well, I did battle with bees. I was out mowing the lawn the other day, and actually last week got stung again. That's a common thing. Get out there and mow the lawn, and you don't see where these are bees that make their nest in a little hole in the dirt in the ground. So I'm mowing over it and got stung. Found that one, sprayed some stuff down there, covered the hole, and then they came back and built another one. So I'm out there after dark just doing battle with these things, but then I took care of them and went back to mowing the lawn. So that's my brush with nature. I've been stung so many times out there. They just attack.
You didn't see the little camera, but they put pictures of you on Facebook waving your arms around like a madman out there.
Not waving around like a madman, because usually they hit me and I'm like, all right, there's another one. Have to mark the spot and come back out later. We've got some messages over here on Twitter.
I see Marlena Smith Burris has checked in. She says, ready for tonight's Voice of Indy episode. Join the live show at 7 p.m. Central Time. Marlena, we also noticed you were promoting, I think it's a new story out there under the name Marlena Smith. I meant to look into that a little bit more. Keep us informed. We can talk about it a little bit. So thanks for checking in today, Marlena. And you got Verwayne?
Yeah. Verwayne Greenhouse says, the penultimate episode of In the Marsh, my Vela murder investigation story has posted. Our killer is on his way home and is unaware the cops are waiting for him at the airport. What could go wrong? The last chapter posts soon.
All right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, go for Wayne. Everybody check that out.
And Robert Wilscroft says he is standing by to enjoy the program. Well,
thank you,
Robert.
Welcome aboard.
All right. So, hey, listen, you listeners, you just saw how a couple of people on Twitter got in on the action already with their comments and their standing by with more, I hope. So if you want to participate, you can either call in or you can do so on Twitter. And here's how you can go about doing that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Inked Group on Twitter.
Now, remember, people, that's hashtag Fresh Inked Group. The Twitter account is at Fresh Inked Group, but if you put at Fresh Inked Group in there and not hashtag Fresh Inked Group, we're not monitoring that. We're monitoring the hashtags. So during the show,
hashtag Fresh Inked Group.
Fresh Inked Group.
Yeah. All right.
So we've got some books coming out pretty soon. We've got Submariner by retired Naval Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate. He's got 60 stories in there. Real, true life, wild adventure, submarine, life of a submariner stories. And they have been compiled by Robert G. Willis-Croft, who's also a retired Navy and writes books about submarines, submarine thrillers, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. But at any rate, that book, Submariner, is coming out pretty soon. It is fascinating. I'm telling you, it's really cool. This guy got to command the mission to do the Space Shuttle Challenger recovery, among other things. And he's just got fun stories, like discovering a Russian spy had moved in across the street from him. Some of it's funny. Some of it's heartbreaking. Some of it's, life in the military kind of stuff. And it's all fun. So we urge you to check that out. Submariner by Jerry Pate, P-A-I-T.
Yeah, and we also have Practical Problems. That's, do we have a date on that yet?
Yeah, like now.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's sending his final approval to us tonight, and we're going to try to get it uploaded tomorrow.
Yeah, this is Practical Problems by Jay Ash Looney, and he will be on the show next week. That's why we're trying to get him to get off his duff and get these proofs finalized, and we can get that out. So he'll have a show when it comes time, or he'll have a new product when it comes time for him to be on the show next week. And if you want to know more about these kinds of things, like new books and new videos and book trailers and podcasts and all things indie publishing and Fresh Ink Group, you got to subscribe to our newsletter. You can do so through this means, or you can go over to our Voice of Indie podcast.wordpress.com blog, Voice of Indie podcast.wordpress.com. And there's a page over there. Yeah, there's a page over there. This is a new blog that we're putting together specifically for this show. And so it's in the early construction phases, but it's still open. You can go check it out. Or you can subscribe to our newsletter through this means.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
Hey.
Fish the show now.
Well, it's time for me to have a look and see what's going on in our print bestsellers.
Right.
I'm noticing a couple of interesting trends that have been developing over the last couple of months. I got to tell you, years and years ago, I thought that publishing of nonfiction was going to wither with the internet. I mean, why would you buy a book on a topic that you can Google and read for days information about it anyway? So I thought fiction was going to keep rising above. Nonfiction would kind of fade out in the publishing, not fade out, but I mean, fade down some. Publishing industry, but we're finding quite the opposite. It seems like every week our bestsellers are the nonfiction books. This week, the one that was in the number one slot last week is in this week again in both one and two slots. The hardcover edition is outselling the softcover edition. Keep that in mind, you people who, you're talking to me and you're saying, do I really need a hardcover? Hey, some people apparently can make a good money off of them. But at any rate, this book is called Still Not Enough, Minority Millennials in the Workforce, and it's by Janelle A. Jordan. It's a fantastic book. When I checked to see how the sales were going and compiled this list 2 days ago, she had the number one and two slots. Today, she still has the number one and two slots, but with three times the numbers she had 48 hours ago and approximately 10 times the numbers of what's in the number three slot. She's rocking and rolling on this book. These numbers are like, I about fell off my chair, but luckily there was no spider under me to fall on. The third bestseller this week is one that we continue to gloat about and thoroughly enjoy seeing its success, Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition, by Dr. Marshall L. Shearer and his wife. He's the late Marshall Shearer, and his wife is still with us, Marguerite R. Shearer. So that's by the Doctors Shearer. Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, 3rd edition. It's a relationship book. How to understand your relationship, how to maximize your communication, how to understand the cycles of love and hope and, you know, and find ways to make things work better for you and just be happy. Great book. In our 4th and 5th slots, 2 days ago, we had both of the books we published by Mary Schmidt. She uses S. Jackson and some different names, but it's all Mary Schmidt. And that's her 2 books, Sammy Hero at Age 5, which is the memoir about her son who she lost at age 5 to brain cancer, pediatric cancer. And then the number 5 slot was held by When Angels Fly, which is the kind of adult point of view of that whole saga and with a lot more focus on what went down with the medical industry, mistakes that were made, and things like that, too. Those are both very excellent books, highly recommended. But this, in the last 48 hours, the 5th slot got bumped out and replaced by The High Road by Mark Herndon, Country Music Hall of Fame drummer, played for almost 3 decades with the supergroup Alabama, with a whole string of number one hits. His memoir, we published it in 2016, and here we are almost 7 years later, and this thing still likes to land in our top 5 lists sometimes every week.
It's a perennial seller.
Yeah, congratulations, everybody. And
yeah, congratulations.
Janelle Jordan. You're rocking, Janelle.
And speaking of Janelle Jordan, and I'm going to segue this into the archives, Janelle A. Jordan, her episode, when she was on, that's doing gangbusters, as the kids like to say.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, in the 1930s.
23
Yeah, I mean, her episode's quite popular, and, you know, we tout this all the time. We get more listens through the archive because a lot of people at this time, in the middle of the week, they can't tune in live, but they do go to the archive. So keep that in mind, all of those who have been guests on this show. Go back and promote your archived episode. Caleb Pirtle, he is, you know, really, you know, kind of setting the bar up a little bit higher. Everybody's still, you know, moving along pretty good, but Caleb kind of nudged that bar up a little bit. His episode's quite popular. So, again, keep that in mind. And if you're an author that's been on this show or a musician and you've been on this show, make sure you promote those links that I send to you after you're done as a guest here, because these episodes live on in perpetuity. And here's how you can find those archives.
If you miss a show, find us in the archives in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on to the business at hand. But before we do, I want to throw this out here. On Twitter, Robert Willis Croft said about your frogs, how about Maurice and Pierre? There you go.
I've never named them. I just know them by this one's got a scar on his back, and that one's got the wide stripe, and that one's got the 2 spots down near his butt. You know,
it's wrong named Scar.
So I guess Spotty Butt will have to be that one. But I know you're getting ready to intro this week's guest. You want to go ahead and run the promo for Meet the Author, and then we'll hear her bio. Well,
sure. Let's go ahead and do that.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Joan. We would like you to join us on Meet the Author podcast live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S.
Yeah, Meet the Author podcast is a live video podcast produced in association with WLFE-D Radio, airing on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Shortly after each episode ends, it's released on a dozen major podcast platforms.
We have casual conversations with authors of many genres. You will often hear humorous stories from their lives or sometimes some very poignant stories. Some of these people have overcome great obstacles to become authors. However, it's always a fun time.
It always is. So come join the fun, make comments, ask questions. We hope to see you at Meet the Author podcast live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find all the program links at indiebooksource.com. Until then.
That's all, folks.
Yes, that's an excellent show. We both endorse that heartily.
Yes, I was watching it tonight. They had a pre-recorded episode tonight, but it was quite a compelling author they had on. Good interview.
So, they have an excellent archives as well, and I know two episodes in particular that are definitely worth checking out. What would those be?
That would be Beam Weeks and Stephen G's, those guys that most people don't know who they are, but we've met them. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight's guest, Patricia A. Guthrie, is the author of romantic suspense novels, mystery, short stories, and nonfiction articles. An accomplished musician and singer, she has appeared in opera companies in Europe and the United States and performed as a church soloist and taught music. Her books include Eerie Charms of the Short Story, which I've read and is excellent, Legacy of Danger, and Legacy of Danger, which I've read and is excellent. She offers short stories on Amazon.com and Skyline Magazine, Affaire de Coeur, as well as nonfiction articles in the Kali Cassette and online Nature Journal. An avid animal lover, she has shown horses in quarter horse and collies at dog shows. And welcome to the show, Patricia A. Guthrie. Or welcome back, I should say.
Thank you. Hi.
Hey, yeah, this is your third appearance on our show, which means we get to ask you all kinds of weird, quirky, surprise questions instead of some of our usual
stuff.
No. And see if we can gotcha.
Well, you probably can.
Yeah,
that's
probably.
Easy to do.
But we always enjoy working on your projects. And, of course, you're here again on the show because you have another book coming out. This is Water Lilies Over My Grave. And we are going to talk about that shortly, but first, let's back up a little bit and ask, how is it that you start a story? What's the impetus? What gets you going? What plants the seed? What waters that seed? Let's throw metaphors at Pat until she answers.
Well, let me answer. I can give you something. In Water Lilies, it was a germ that happened to me years and years ago. I was in kind of bad emotional state when I went into college and I moved away from home and moved to New York City. And the people over at Manhattan School of Music, bless their hearts, they were wonderful. They prescribed me to go to see a psychiatrist just to get analyzed and figured out where to place me. And I talked for 45 minutes and I was becoming an emotional wreck, you know, just going through all of this stuff. And he cut me off at a point where I was just about to break. And I walked outside and nearly got hit by a car. Well, fortunately, you know, I didn't get hit by a car and I'm fine. But I never forgot that. So I put that, I centered Water Lilies Over My Grave around that one incident that happened to my burnt out detective in the story. So that's how that started.
Oh, cool.
The thing in Romania, the thing of Legacy, happened because I loved the Dracula stories. I just was so into horror and gothic and stuff like that.
Now let me interrupt and say this is Legacy of Danger, your novel.
Yeah, this is in the one I'm just talking about now. Right, Legacy of Danger. And starts in Evanston, Illinois. And ends up in the in a place called Decaney, where Elena Decaney is, her family is the namesake for the town. And anyway, she inherits a castle in Romania, and she's attacked by an international assassin or hitman. And she has to figure out why.
Yeah, that would be my question.
Yeah. And so two people come to help her, to rescue her. One is her ex-boyfriend, who she can't stand and doesn't want anything to do with. And the other is her deceased husband, who was killed in a skirmish in Germany. Germany?
Germany.
No.
That's not the book I read.
No, me either. So anyway, that's pretty much the gist of it. It is a paranormal suspense or romantic. I always considered it a romantic suspense, but it's basically paranormal because it has ghosts in it. There's nothing to do with Dracula, but it does make reference to history because the Caney family in the 1400s, 1400s were part of the hierarchy in Romania. And they, when they figured out what a monster Vlad Tepes was, they had him killed. So,
yeah.
So that does come into play. And then there's a silver cross that they have to find, and a ruby, priceless ruby that was taken off of this cross, and she inherits that. So anyway, that's pretty much.
So what about eerie charms of the short story? You've got quite a variety of different kinds of stories in there. Where do you get those ideas? You just pop into your head and you run with them, or you plan them, think about them for a while?
Yeah, well, I think my first story started back in the 90s. I've been writing them all throughout my writing career, 20 years of it. There's one about Adam and Eve, and that's tongue-in-cheek. Lucifer loses his day job, so he starts his own gig. And he wants to, what does he want to do? He wants to sabotage God's creation, creation of man, Adam and Eve. So he becomes a snake. No, actually, he sends a snake out. And they persuade Adam and Eve to eat the apple. So that's the first story. And then there was The Attic, which is about a little girl who throws tremendous temper tantrums, and she destroys her toys. But then one day, they lash out in revenge. And then it was the one of, I always wanted to do this. A miserable housewife finds a new life for her in a tear-stained old painting. And that was fun. I really enjoyed that. She was riding a horse back in her old days, her younger days. So that snake deciding the fate of the world. A slot machine decides the winners and losers. And I decided on that when I went to the casino with some friends of mine.
Ooh.
And I kind of looked around. Oh, yeah, this is something else. There's no windows at all. And they have a constant stream of air flowing through. So I decided, hey, what if a slot machine decides winners and losers? And it can manipulate its screws, so it makes it looser.
Hmm.
So that was that story.
I know some people who think that's how they work. I'm not joking. Literally, I know people who think that's how they work. They also think people are watching with cameras and deciding whether or not to let you win or not.
Oh.
Which,
now,
you know, well, my next question is always, then, why do you go to the casino? If you think
it's
rigged.
Exactly. Now, Eerie Charms, I love that whole collection of short stories, because it's got that spooky factor, but there's also humor throughout it. There's, you know, weaved in there. They're not laugh out loud, but I mean, there's humorous elements to it. And it's just a fantastic one. In the story about the toys in the attic, turning on this bratty little kid. I always thought that would have made a fantastic Twilight Zone episode. It was that good.
Well, all of her stories are very Twilight Zone-ish, yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of them that are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
cool. Well, let's take a quick look at Twitter and then run a commercial and see if we got any phone callers waiting. On Twitter,
we've got a caller lined up. Hold on, caller. We'll get you.
For Wayne Green, host, and I start every Wednesday morning checking out my hashtag Fresh Ink Group newsletter. Tons of information, or as they say, news you can use. Yeah, thanks for the endorsement, Verwayne. He also added, it's good to see you again tonight, Pat Guthrie. Hello, Patricia. And then Joe Conzel. Yeah, Joe Conzel says, hi, everyone. Going to sit this one out tonight. We're celebrating our grandson's preschool graduation.
Congratulations, grandson.
We're at a terrific Mexican restaurant having a little party. Catch you all next week. Smiley face. What's missing here is a picture of what he's eating. Come on, Joe. This is social
or the
media.
Or the picture of the margarita.
Or something, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, geez, you got the media at your fingertips. Then we got Marlena Smith Burris, character question. Do people from your own life play into any of your stories, Pat?
Oh, yes. Yep. Yes, they do. I don't think you can recognize them. I'm not sure I can even recognize them anymore, but yes, they do. I had a boyfriend once who was a nasty, nasty brute.
Oh.
And he figured prominently in one of my stories. I'm trying to think of which one. Probably Nat's murder. I think it was in Matt's murder.
Oh, of course. Matt, you'd have to. Old boyfriend's got to be.
Yes, he was.
All right.
Cool. Well, you want to roll, Beam?
Sure do.
Discover Practical Problems, 10 Stories for the Stage by Jay Ezhlouni. In Goin' Legit, mobsters seek a conventional bank loan with hilarious results. In The Angry Ashtray, an inanimate object comes to life and has a surprising view about familiarity. In Bluesman Brando, actor Marlon Brando pays a surprising and surreal visit to a suburban family. In Up From the Ashes, a local historical society decides to turn back the clock, way back. In A Hard Way's Night, an aging rock band regroups to bid goodbye to the grungy ballroom where they got their start. And in The Three Christs of Ypsilanti, based entirely upon a true story, three psychotics attempt to convince a psychologist they are each the son of God. There are four more stories too delicious to summarize by Jay Ezhlouni and published proudly by Fresh Ink Group in soft, hard, and all-digital formats. Practical Problems delivers what it promises.
Those are some very cool plays, but you can just read it like a book. Just read them like stories if you want.
Yeah, and you know, a story is going to be interesting when it's got not one, not two, but three psychotics.
Yeah.
That sounds very interesting.
And the name of the city, Ypsilanti, in one of the titles.
Ypsilanti.
Ooh, that's right there.
Yeah, Ypsilanti, Michigan. All right, let's go to the phone. We're going to take this here phone call and see what's up with the phone caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Hello, caller.
You're supposed to give the number.
Well, you're the only caller on, Dr. Helen.
Yeah.
You're the only caller.
It's me, Dr. Helen. Listen, I'm just enjoying our Wednesday evening Fresh Ink Group soiree.
All right.
I'm still at Riverside Rehab. So I'm just enjoying your show.
And all of our listeners do wish you the best in your recovery, Dr. Helen.
Yes.
Thank you. Tomorrow I'm supposed to walk for the first time in 2 months.
All right.
All right.
So wish me luck, but enjoy. I'm enjoying the literary questions and all.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, thanks for calling in, Dr. Helen. We wish you a speedy recovery.
Yeah.
Thank
Check
you.
In. Let us know how the walking goes. We'll start sending you out for errands.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Great. You know, we should probably run another commercial because we're running way behind on the commercials, and then get back into talking to Pat some more.
We can do that. We are the studio. Wrong one. Let's hit this one.
That doesn't matter.
Submariner, 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the Shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of the fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Williscroft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
Two weeks from tonight, retired Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate will be our guest, and Robert G. Willis Croft will be joining him. So we'll have a four-way conversation, and we'll be talking submarines and naval life. So that should be fun and exciting. If you know anybody who's really into submarines and U.S. Navy and SEALs, all that
your dad?
Stuff, yeah, make sure they know about it.
Who reads submarine books?
Yeah, Pat, you've been in publishing for a little while. You did some self-publishing. You've worked with other publishers, and now you're working exclusively with Fresh Ink Group, and we're republishing some of your stuff.
Yep.
So not to put too fine a point on that, but you've learned a few things the hard way over the years, and you've made a couple of, you know, at least one major mistake. What was that mistake? What'd you learn from that?
Oh, there was quite a few major mistakes along the way. But the one I love to focus on, because it's such a great war story, is that my first book that I started writing was called Mass Murder, and which is the one I'm working on now. Anyway, I got this word processor. I had been writing longhand before that, and this was back in the 1990s. I put the book up on, I wrote the book, I wrote the whole thing. I put it up, I wrote the book.
Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
I put it in the word processor, and somehow I really didn't know how to save anything at that point. And I was going to save it on a floppy so I could put it into the new computer I was buying, an ASTI, I think it was. And I didn't know how to save, so I didn't save it. So I lost the whole manuscript. But the thing is, it was a good thing that I did erase all of that, because it must have been garbage. The first two or three chapters was all description of this, of the setting of the book. And that was just not a good thing.
Yeah, that happened to me. In fact, it's one of the stories that I'm working on now. I started this many, many years ago, and I kind of put it away because I had ideas for other stories that ended up I've published since, and namely a bunch of short stories. But the first five chapters of one of my current works, this is about 7-8 years ago. I knew how to save it, and I saved it on a Word file, and I don't know what happened, but it disappeared off my computer. And to this day, I have no idea where it went. But the good thing is this is back when I was still doing the rough drafts by hand. So I had 8 chapters that I was loading into this Word file at the time, and the first 5 disappeared. I was able to go back and type them all back out. But that could have been a horror story right there, because it was some good writing. But, you know, it's been updated, and where it's at now, hopefully that'll see the light of day before too long. But so I feel your pain there, Pat.
I don't feel pain anymore. I never really felt a lot of pain except when it happened. I even went to the local computer guy, and he couldn't figure out what happened to it, and it was gone. It was just gone.
I dug through my hard drive and couldn't find it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, rumor has it we have another caller waiting, Beam?
We do have another caller. We'll
why
hit
don't we, why don't we run
the commercial.
New ad, and then
and,
take a call.
And we will, yeah. All right.
Psychologist Annabelle O'Brien flees from her psychotic ex-husband in New York City, only to find he is stalking her across the country with deadly intentions. She takes a job in the resort town of Lake Nage. When a series of attacks place her in even greater danger, Annabelle turns to hostile burnout of a detective, Mark Driscoll, who is assigned to protect her. Then, two women who resemble her are murdered, and the town is gripped with fear. Mark and Annabelle must work together to catch the killer before he catches them. From the celebrated author of such bestsellers as Legacy of Danger and her collection Eerie Charms of the Short Story, Water Lilies Over My Grave is a novel of psychological suspense about one woman searching for a new life, even as she is threatened by her old one. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Water Lilies Over My Grave is available in all print and digital formats worldwide.
Get out, Jen. Grab your copy today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look for the, since this is a republish, you can still find old editions out there with the old cover. Look for the new one with the vivid hand coming up out of the water.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phones and see who our new caller is. Hello, caller, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Suzanne Guthrie, and I'm
calling
from Poughkeepsie, New York.
Hey,
welcome to the show. Got the same last name as our guest.
Yeah, coincidence, huh?
And the same city as Poughkeepsie Herndon.
No, I am Pat's sister.
Oh, cool.
Hi, Suzanne.
Well, welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat.
Hey. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Did you bring her any questions or challenges?
Well, I just want to say that the last time Pat was on the show, I learned a whole lot of stuff about her I didn't know. So I'm tuned in just to hear, you know, the dirt.
Dishing dirt.
Good. What kind of dirt
it's
would
dirt
you like?
Dirt talk with Voice of India.
I'm thinking childhood stories with siblings.
Well, I like the Twilight Zone aspect.
I
identified with that.
I never knew that.
So, Suzanne, do you do any writing?
Well, yes, I do.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Yes.
Tell us about it. You're a writer. You're supposed to like tell
oh,
us
dear.
About it.
Well, I'm an author. I am a public theologian. I'm an Episcopal priest. I help preachers with their sermons every week online, and I'm the author of two books and numerous articles over the decades in journals. And now, in my retirement, I'm working on poetry.
Oh,
I finally slowed down enough to be able to read and now write poetry. So that's what I'm working on now, as well as holding up the other stuff.
Now, the two books, those are for sale out there right now? Then we need to hear the titles.
Titles.
Yeah, titles. Sell some books.
Well,
send people your way.
Well, this is about Pat's books. Mine are not at all as exciting as hers.
Yeah, we've had Pat on three times.
No, I thought they were exciting. Tell them what it is. Tell them the name of your book.
One is called Grace's Window. And the other one is called Praying the Hours, which wasn't my title for it. It's just the publisher gave it that title. It's more interesting than the title sounds. But anyway.
So what are they? Are they like devotionals or are they stories? Or?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I would say they're in their spirituality.
Okay.
In that genre.
Big demand for that kind of material, New Age spirituality.
Sir.
Well, cool. So what do you think, Pat? Have you read her books?
Yes, I have them right here.
Do you endorse them?
I do.
Now, say that's the perfect caller, when you can just endorse each other's books, right?
Exactly.
Now, Suzanne, yeah. I don't remember Patricia telling us about your books before, so we're glad you called in. We got to learn about
them.
And in the process, we learned a little bit more about Patricia, too.
Your books, too.
All right.
That's great. It's so nice that you called in. I'm really happy. Is there
Thanks
anything
I have
no
a question about the story about the attic? Did you have a particular attic in mind in your imagination?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what it was. I think it was the attic in Lynbrook. I had a house in Lynbrook that had three stories, and on the top story, Sue and I shared, they divided it into three parts. Sue and I shared one part, my brother shared the middle part, and on the other side was the attic. So I always think of that attic when I think of attic. Only the attic in my story is a lot bigger, but still. Yeah, Linda was the attic I had in mind.
So then that's based in a real attic.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, I can smell it in my imagination. I can evoke the smell, you know.
That's interesting how memory works like that, because there are certain things, I catch certain smells and it takes me back, you know, 40, 50 years ago to a place. You know, there's a particular paint that takes me back to when I was probably 3 years old and my parents were painting the trim in our house. And I got to this day, if I smell it, it takes me right back there to me being a little toddler watching them paint. I can remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can relate to that too.
Got the Astoria in there.
The painted
sure
trim.
Well, I think Proust pretty much captured that. Recherche de temps perdu, the Madeleine, you know, the taste of the Madeleine gave him that whole, you know, all of those big fat books.
Madeleine.
Remembrance of things past.
Oh, so he writes Madeleine.
It's a literary illusion.
Yeah, we're promoting Proust tonight now.
Yeah.
I've not read any Proust.
Can we get him on?
Yeah, can we get him on? We'll
he'll
dig him
talk
up
you from his bed.
Sit down, Marcel.
He was a French author.
Yes. And he's long gone.
You know, last time we had Patricia on the show, she had just moved to a new place there in Cook County, close to Chicago. And have you been out to visit her there yet, Suzanne?
No, I have not, but it sounds wonderful.
It is. I love it here.
So you're liking it, Pat? What's cool about it? What's great?
Well, there's a lot of things that are cool about it. First of all, I love my apartment. It's really nice. It's a lot more compact than my house in Park Forest, and smaller, but not a whole bunch of degrees smaller, really. I think I like my bedroom better. The closets, I've got a lot of closet space here. I got my two cats came with me, so they allow pests.
Good, good. You didn't
want to
leave the pests.
Something. I think about 180 apartments, and they're all filled except maybe two. I have a lovely view out my bedroom window, and that's where I set up my desk, which is a table.
What do you see in the view?
Outside of my window, I can see there's a pond out there.
Nice.
And at certain times of year, you can see, what do you call them? Long necks.
Giraffe.
Like herons or cranes?
Giraffe.
They're not herons. They're
if you look out there and see a giraffe standing in your pond, I want a picture of it.
Oh, yeah.
I do, too. I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, up in your area, you get a lot of cranes. Down here where I am, they will get more of the herons, but it's a very similar bird. It stands 3-4 feet tall, look at you like, who are you messing with?
Hey, I can always stop with stuff. Photoshop.
It sounds like a writing prompt, though. You could use that as a writing prompt to get you going in the morning. I looked out my window into the pond, and
that's how I got a lot of more stories, by the way, from writing prompts.
Pat, I'm ahead of you on the experience there. I've already put a giraffe in a minibus.
With a sunroof
here.
Yep. And that, by the way, is called Strange Highway, HWY by Dean Wheat.
I love it.
Much of a short story.
I love the cover.
Blood.
I love the cover.
I do too. Giraffe on one side, a dog on the other.
Excellent.
Traveling companion.
Yeah. It was good.
All right.
Suzanne, we really appreciate you calling in.
Okay, sure.
And, you know, when we're going to have Pat back next time she puts out a book, because she's putting out books. And,
I'm excited about these short stories.
Yeah.
The weirder, the better.
Yeah, call in.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I will let you all go on with your giraffes and your high life. And,
Proust literary illusions.
I'll be listening to the end of the show.
That's a first.
All right.
A Proust mention on this show. That's a first.
Yeah. Thanks, Suzanne.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Okay, bye-bye. So long.
You know,
bye.
It might have been the first giraffe mentioned, too. I'm going to have to go back to the records and check.
Now, over on Twitter, Robert Williscroft says, it turns out that I was listening to last week's broadcast. I'm here now.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, yeah, Robert.
And Verlaine Greenhouse says,
you missed a Submariner commercial and us ranting and raving about what a great author you are.
Yeah, and Verlaine Greenhouse, he answered back and said, if you hit the start button, and this is good for everybody to know, if you hit the start button 2 seconds too quick, it will take you back to the previous episode. I've done that a time or two myself.
Oh, I did that. Okay.
That happens. Usually if you wait till about, 20, 30 seconds into it, you can, but get in as the opening is starting. You might miss the opening song, but you're guaranteed to know that you're in that. Now, here's the thing to keep in mind. At the top of every episode, I always tell you, this is episode number 106. So keep that in mind so you know which one you're listening to.
Right.
All right.
So, Pat, last time you were on, we talked some about your singing career as an opera singer. Okay. I found that really fascinating. Most of your life, opera has been your passion, right? I mean, when you were young, you loved listening to opera, and you got a degree in it. Tell us about your interest in opera over the years, how that came about, and what you did with it, which we're all proud of.
My mother. She was an artist. She was a pianist. She loved the opera. She took me every chance she got. We went to museums, we went to the opera, we went to the ballet, saw Margot Fonteyn in New York. It was, she really was the one that promoted me. But she knew I had a voice, and I did have a voice. I do have a voice, I suppose. So that's how I really got started. I was in a lot of, productions and stuff like that in school. And Manhattan School of Music, I was in several operas. It was really fun roles.
Names we would recognize, like Carmen or anything?
Manhattan School of Music was famous for operas that weren't well known. Like, there was a couple of things. There's Lucio Silla. I forgot who wrote that. It might have been Mozart. It was the first thing he ever wrote, Lucio Silla.
I read about that. He was like 9 years old or something when he wrote that, wasn't he?
Yeah, right.
He was ridiculously young.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And then there was the Impresario, which I dearly loved, and that was Mozart too. There was Miss Golden Trill and Silver Peel, and I was Miss Silver Peel. And then I was also a smaller character in Dido and Aeneas. I was Belinda, her handmaiden.
So did these involve touring and traveling and all that, or were these local productions?
Well, these were at Manhattan School of Music, their opera theater. But then I auditioned Herbert Grosse from the Centre Lyrique International from Switzerland, from Geneva, Switzerland, came and had auditions. And I sang for him, and he offered me a position over in Switzerland to be in his opera school. And, of course, I took it. And then I auditioned for several competitions in New York and money to get over there. So that was really fun. And then at the opera school we did Albert Herring. And I was Miss Wordsworth and Albert Herring, all the Miss Albert. Oh, so fun. And then I was also in some of their major productions, too. I was in, Peter Grimes. I was one of the nieces in Peter Grimes.
That's
with
a good one.
Grant Evans.
Yeah.
And just trying to think of some of the other operas that I did with them. Oh, I was in Cenerentola. I was one of the sisters in Cenerentola.
That I'm not familiar with.
Now, Stephen, you had mentioned Carmen, and I've seen one opera in my entire life, and it was Carmen. It was at the Wharton Center at Michigan State University, and this is probably 78 or 79, and it was, I mean, it was such a cool experience.
Yeah,
opera's not my thing.
Wasn't it?
I'll admit, I'm a metalhead, but I love all kinds of music. I'm just not a real big opera fan, although there are a lot of metal singers who are operatically trained so they can hit them high notes and just some really cool stuff. But going to see there, I had those preconceived notions that this is going to be stupid because, you know, I'm a kid at the time. I guess 13, somewhere in there. And blew me away. Just fantastic. They came out and explained how they had that, just that morning, they had the stage settings had been flown in from Italy, and they had just arrived that morning. So they were still setting it up when we got there. And just fantastic. I mean, cool. I'm surprised I ever went back. It was a good time.
Oh, backstage an opera company is fantastic. I mean, there's so much going on, and the sets are enormous.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to climb a ladder to get to some of the top windows in the scenery, you know. I was in one of the top windows in one of the sets, and I had to climb a ladder to get up there.
Cool.
You were lucky the way your mother introduced you at such an early age, because you developed appreciation before you developed the attitude, like Beam was just talking about. Because once kids start to get into adolescence, a lot of times they reject things for no other reason than it just doesn't seem cool. But, you know, I'm a denizen of symphonies, and all my life I've been taking people to their first symphonies and had them say, wow, I've just never had any idea that it's so cool, you know. But when I do that, I just thrill at seeing a couple of kids in the audience, you know, because you go to a symphony, it's going to be 98% is going to be, you know, at least middle-aged people for the most part, or a lot of college student age, stuff like that. Then you find, you know, a 10-year-old over there and a couple of 12-year-olds over here, and they're enjoying it. I just think that's cool.
And when I was in Manhattan, at Manhattan School of Music, where I went to college, we used to get free tickets to the opera. And we used to go and stand in the balcony and watch what was going on 100,000 feet below us. That blew my mind. And I think one of my favorite venues right now is the ballet. I just love the ballet. And my favorite ballet is Giselle.
Ooh.
It's such a romantic thing.
Yeah. Graceful, beautiful.
It's absolutely a wonderful ballet. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Pat, we got two more commercials of yours loaded up. You know, I think maybe we could interrupt for a minute here and play maybe Eerie Charms.
All righty.
Build up some interest in these books.
Okay.
Lucifer loses his day job, so he starts his own gig. A little girl's tantrum destroys her toys, but will they lash out in revenge? Can a miserable housewife find a new life for herself in a tear-stained old painting? Eerie Charms of the short story, fantasy, mystery, and horror includes a snake deciding the fate of the world, a slot machine choosing life's winners and losers, a malevolent fairy dancing men to their deaths, a couple desperate to escape a train station, the dog show judge facing death, and more great tales. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Eerie Charms is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Patricia A. Guthrie offers a cauldron of eerie delights that will please, delight, and yet terrify you.
Yeah, if you are a fan of the short story, as I am, get this book. It's an excellent collection of short stories that there's some darkness, there's some humor, and some things that make you go, So
and
go check that
addict.
Out.
There's an addict. Ooh, I've heard
there's
about that.
There's an addict.
Yeah.
Now, Patricia, here's something you and I have in common. It's horses. When I was a kid growing up, I showed horses and in 4-H and open class. And I had mentioned in your bio that you showed horses as well. Where did your love of horses come from? And tell us a little bit about the show.
I have no idea. I think I had it since the day I was born. I grew up in Lynbrook, which is in Nassau County on Long Island. We weren't that far away from Belmont Park, which was a well-known racetrack. It is a well-known racetrack. I knew all the Derby winners.
through 1955, which is when I stopped doing that, I just loved them. And I followed the junk wagon all around town because they had a horse. My father, when he heard it, he got furious and he said, "Don't you dare go around there anymore." Oh, okay. So I didn't. But then the first time I went horseback riding, I fell off. I was about 12 years old. My father took me horseback riding for my birthday. And I just went off.
That's happened to me. I mean, not falling off. I've been bucked off, been kicked, been bit.
Yeah.
Well, you've had an affinity for horses all your life. Have you noticed they have an affinity for you? Do you seem to connect with them well? Are you a horse whisperer, as they say?
I don't know if I'm a horse whisperer, but I've had 13 horses in my life. And my first one was with a little half Arabian mare, who was really kind of cookie. And my horse now is a paint mare, quarter horse mare. She's gorgeous. She's just wonderful. And she's almost into her 20s. She's about 19 right now. I've had her since 2013. I haven't shown her, but I did show horses back in the 80s and the 90s. I had a wonderful gray horse named Sox. And I showed him in Western Pleasure. And
I showed that Western Pleasure. That was one of the ones I did. A lot of fun.
That. And then before that, the mare Bunny, she was a hunter. So I wrote her English and and I did some trail work with them too, with all of them. That was trail. I loved doing trail because so it's slow. And it's precise and methodical, and you get them to do all kinds of fun things, like turn on their haunches and side pass over a log. So I love doing that. Yeah, and I showed in my older days, my younger days. But now my mare now is at a barn in Beecher, which is quite a ways from here. So I don't get out to see her much, but I am share boarding with a girl who does ride her quite a bit, and I know she's being well cared for. She turns out every day, and she's fed well, and she looks great, and she knows me when I come. She's like, ah!
Yeah, see that? When you connect with a horse like that, it's supposed to be a very deep bond. I keep hearing this from people. Like we mentioned earlier, the shearers who have that Maximizing Happiness book out, they lived on a horse farm. For like 50 years, and she still lives there in her 90s, but she finally had to let her last horse go this year because it's just getting too hard for her to take care of them and stuff. But that she talks about that affinity, being able to connect with the horse, and you can almost see each other's minds and stuff.
You know,
and
that's what I'm talking about.
I've always been jealous of that because I rode horse one time in my life, 10 years old, went out, did a trail run for about 45 minutes, thought, okay, this is kind of fun, you know, kind of. In a makes your butt hurt kind of a way. And then when we got done, we went back to the stable and everybody got off their horse and I got off my horse and the horse turned around, reached over and grabbed my arm right below the shoulder and crushed it. I mean, just made it bleed, took out a chunk of skin, just clomped on it. And I was done horse riding after that.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Stamped on and
There's that bond. When I was a kid, I showed back in the 70s, from like 75 to 80. At that age, I had ponies. And my ponies, I had a couple of them, they became my best pals. And with your best pals, you still have those moments where you tend to argue. I want to go this way. And she's saying, I want to go that way. And so you get into this argument, and she might take a little nip at you, you know, just to let you know that she's not putting up with this. And then a minute later, it's the dust up is over and you're back to being best buds again. But there is that my sister had a horse. My dad and stepmom each had horses. My little brother had them. My older brother, he was never interested in them, so he never had one. But we all had these bonds with these horses. And I mean, they're like your best bud.
Yep. And then there was my dog. I had a tremendous bond with my dogs. I had four collies at one time, and I showed them in obedience classes. And I had two very dear friends, two family. Actually, they became my surrogate family here in the Midwest. And we went all over, including Canada. I got a title from a title for Annie in Obedience from Canada. So that was exciting. Yeah, we showed all over. That was fun.
Yeah, collies are known to be smart dogs. But I've always wondered, is it possible to own a collie and never once in its entire life look at it and say, what is it, girl? Did Timmy fall down a well? I would have to do it once, just once.
Absolutely.
Pat, we got another commercial of yours queued up, and we're running short on time here, so why don't we listen to this commercial and talk about that book a little bit and see if we can put this one in the archives to compete with Mr. Pearl.
Oh, okay.
Elena Decani inherits her family's castle in Romania, a land dipped in myths, folklore, and the legendary Walking Dead. The local proverb serves as a warning. Do not speak badly of the devil, because you cannot know to whom you will belong. When she's attacked by an international assassin, only her deceased husband and her ex-boyfriend's live presence can protect her on her journey to the mountainous region of Transylvania. But that's not the only problem troubling Elena. Who is that boy invading her dreams? And what really happened to a priceless gem-crusted silver cross buried by an earthquake in the 15th century? Who's stalking Elena? Who wants her dead and why? Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is a paranormal romantic thriller with a deep mystery and plenty of suspense. It'll haunt you in jacketed hardcover, soft cover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah, this one is paranormally, romantically, thrillerly cool. That's a good book too. So get over there and grab a copy from Amazon or wherever buy your book.
I like that spooky cover too, with the face in the sky and the moonlight, everything. That's just a cool looking book.
Twitter, we got a couple of comments here. Growing up on the farm, this is Bert Wayne Greenhall. Growing up on the farm, we always had about 150 cattle and two huge Belgian draft horses. Those are cool horses. They were gentle giants that would frequently come up beside me when I was working in the pasture. And then Willis Croft says, I think your horse may not really like you.
Yeah, I think he's talking about me on that one. I came to that conclusion. All the people who work, they're all gathered around. It's like, that horse has never done that before. And it's like, well, good to know.
He just didn't like it.
Good to know. I was the first.
You rubbed him the wrong way. You got on his bad side. Yep.
Oh, dear.
Horses have personality. They have personality. If they don't feel like riding, you know, but like Verwaine was saying, you know, he'd be working in the pasture and they would come up to him. We used to go out to the pasture and hop on their backs and ride them bareback, and they'd ride around and eat the grass while we were sitting on their backs just talking and all that. And, you know, they're very loving, but there are those days where, hey, everybody's moody. They get into a mood. And they can take a nip at you or you know, try to buck you off or whatever.
Now, Pat, since
I had a horse one time that I got from a guy in Iowa, and he raised roans, beautiful horses, and the horse was a four-year-old. And I told him I was a 70-year-old woman, and I really needed a horse that was gentle. I had ridden a lot, but, you know, I just needed something that maybe finished up a little bit. So I rode him around, and he was fine. He went outside, we walked around. He was great, cantered and all, did all that stuff. And then I bought him and brought him home. And the interesting thing that everybody at the barn said when he came home was that he showed no reaction to anything new. Which is very unusual for horses.
Yeah.
So I worked with him and the barn owner. She's a Western Pleasure woman. She sews a lot. And she knew a lot. She was very knowledgeable. And we worked for about a month. And then it was a cool day, I remember. It was inside, in the indoor arena. And the horse started to buck. And he started to buck high. And it was like being on one of those broncs that you see in the rodeo.
Literally.
He was awful. And I went flying up to the rafters. I was not expecting this. And I went 10 feet off of the ground and down. I think I still hurt at pain from arthritis from some of these injuries that I suffered. Well, needless to say, I had a big thing with the owner, the former owner of this horse, and they didn't want to get rid of, they didn't want to let him go or take him back. So I told them that, because I found out the history of this horse. And I told them that I knew that this horse had done the same thing to the previous owner that had him before they brought him back to the former owner of this horse. So this horse had been through several hands, and they finally gave me my money back. But it was a lot of money. It was like $4,000. That was a good horse. I mean, well, he wasn't such a good horse. No, he wasn't.
That's pretty bad. And going through owner after owner doesn't make things better, usually. It just, makes them feel more jaded and jaundiced, whatever. All right, Pat, we've put out three books for you since you came to Fresh Ink Group: Legacy of Danger, Eerie Charms of the Short Story, and now, released this week, in fact, it hit Amazon literally today in the ebook edition, and that's Water Lilies Over My Grave. Yeah, if you haven't been over there and seen it yet, I looked at it this afternoon. We're also seeing the old edition there, which we need to get pulled down and get those reviews migrated. And
I know, we're crying. Lauren has not been able to succeed so far. So,
well, she
I
just
know,
started.
I told her.
She gets it done. Sometimes it takes a few days. Sometimes it takes a few months. We just went through it not long ago with Gwen Plano, and it took over 6 months. So Amazon is just Amazon. Usually she can get that done in a week or two. That's why we've got a 6-week pre-sale. But people, you can get over there and order an ebook copy now. Or if you wait a couple of days, you can order print editions. And then the release date is, what, September 29th?
29th, yeah.
So you can order your copies beforehand, but then it'll get shipped to you on the 29th. Your ebook will be delivered on the 29th. Now, Pat, that's three books that we've done at Fresh Ink Group. What's next?
Well, I am working on the first book I ever wrote, and that was Matt's Murder. And I've worked on that on and off for, how long has it been, 20 years? But one thing I have discovered that my writing back then was nothing like the way I'm writing now, and I'm having some issues with that. So it's going to take me a while to figure out how I like the story the way it is. The story's fine. But it's the presentation. So I got to work on that.
Okay, so that one's next. You got any more in the hopper after that?
Yeah. I have one about a senior citizen community in Upper Michigan. I don't know why Upper Michigan. I have no idea.
Yeah, but I put it outside Chicago.
Yeah. And then it's right by a lake.
Big lake?
It's not a great lake, I don't think. I don't think so. But anyway, it's about deaths in a senior citizen community.
Oh, okay.
So I'm kind of working on that.
Are there zombies?
They're not zombies, no. No, no, no. I'm not into zombies. I don't even ever get into zombies.
I'm just pulling your leg.
I know you are, but still.
We still let him have a microphone, though,
I'm telling you, never know what you're going to get on the other end of the phone.
What about advice to other authors out there? What can you tell people about not making the mistakes you've made or things that you did right or just any other kind of advice?
Well, my basic advice that every author says to everybody is don't give up. Well, if it's your passion, don't give up. Just keep pursuing it. Be persistent. But learn as much as you can, because there's so much with grammar and presentation and editing and just trying to think of all of the other areas of writing that you need to know, get as much, and read a lot, because that will help you develop too. And it doesn't mean you're taking over somebody else's voice, but it does mean that you'll learn a lot about how a polished novel can sound, and it can help you in your own writing.
Yes, it's not only good for helping you learn the techniques and the styles and the methods and the rules,
right,
all that kind of stuff, but it also gives you examples of other people who are doing it in exciting and creative new ways. And that doesn't necessarily mean you want to copy them. It just means it sparks you to kind of go off in another direction and explore your own new ways.
Yeah,
cool.
And try not to plagiarize, for God's sake. Don't plagiarize. Like all my kids did.
Oh.
They would give me these reports, and they have all, like, Amazon down on the bottom.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that really kind of sucked.
Well, Pat, how can people contact you? Where can they find you, like, on social media? Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, blog, website?
I'm on all of them. My website is www.paguthrie.wordpress.com. And that's my website. And every time I put anything out on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, I always put my my website address there.
And you can drop the www. You don't really need to put that in anymore.
Yeah.
No, that's true. You don't. And then on Twitter, well, it would just be www. No, it would be, you get onto Twitter, and my hashtag. What is the heck is my
handle?
Hashtag?
Your handle.
Guthrie1.
I think it's PA Guth1.
Yeah, or Guthrie1. One of the others. I never need to put it in when I get on there. And then Facebook.
It is PA Guthrie 1. At PA Guthrie 1. At GUTHRIE. Yeah, on Twitter.
Oh, on Twitter. Yeah, and then on Facebook, you can go to the search bar and look up Patricia Guthrie, and I'm there.
All right.
So,
okay.
And Instagram too. And then I'm on a new one that I just registered for today. It's called word.com. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I haven't heard of it.
Word.com, huh?
Yeah, word.com. You might want to check it out.
I'll have to write that down and see what's going on with that. See, you learn
something
new each week.
I'm trying very, very, very hard to make new friends on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. It's getting a little more complicated than my poor brain can handle sometimes. But
we keep seeing you out there, and we're proud of you when we do. We remark quite often, Pat's out there working it, and that's what it takes.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Pat, it's been a thrill having you on the show. That's Patricia A. Guthrie, author of spooky, eerie novels and short stories, and Fresh Ink Group member. We're proud to have her as one of our stable of authors as well.
Thanks for joining us, Pat.
Yeah, what's going on in the future here, Beam?
Future.
I dropped the last page. Okay, next week's J. Ash Looney, and that's Practical Problems, the 10 plays that you heard the commercial from a little earlier. And then the week after that?
And the week after that is Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate and Robert G. Willis Croft, and they will be talking about Mr. Pate's book, Submariner. After that,
we're going to have Andrea Wengler. She's the author of How to Start and Run a Food Truck Business in Florida. In the next couple of weeks, we are releasing How to Start and Run a Food Truck Business in Georgia. Tennessee is in process. We're working our way through the states on these. She's putting together quite a collection of books, and she's got a new website. What's the website, Bean?
Yourfoodtruck.com. Is that what it is?
Your food truck how to.
Yourfoodtruckhowto.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, so go check that out. That's been up and running. And following week, we have Paul de Blasi III. Mr. de Blasi, he is a psychologist, and he is an author, and he writes psychological thrillers and things like that. So tune in for that.
Yeah,
this
actually,
guy's got a really cool mind.
Actually, his credentials are a step up. He's a psychiatrist, psychotherapist.
Psychotherapist.
Yeah, and he's got his own business, his own blogs. He's got all kinds of stuff going, a bunch of cool books, and he writes real dark thrillers.
Yeah.
So we're looking to
have warning labels on them.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier today, where you know some people find triggers in there, and it's like, I can't finish reading the book. That's something I got to check out. So we're looking forward to all of these guests. We've got more people coming after that. We've also got a couple of shows coming up where we're going to do some how-tos, some behind-the-scenes, some let-you-in-on-the-inside kind of stuff, just to act like we know what we're doing, and all about having good fun, supporting indie authors and everybody out there. Thanks again for coming on today, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Oh, you're welcome for having me. It's really been fun.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
See you next time.
Oh, so good night. Take care, everybody.
See you next week.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.